commercial builds Mark Giannotto making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Mark Giannotto, Mike Norvell, the head coach of the University of Memphis Tigers, had a message for you on Twitter. He said, stop speculating that he's going anywhere else. He's told you he's got one of the best jobs in the country, and he loves Memphis. That means Mike Norvell is not going to be the next Kansas State coach, correct?
I don't think you can take it any other way. And to be fair, I was speculating that he was staying at Memphis,
right?
In my tweet, based on his earlier tweet. But yeah, no, I mean, honestly, he texted me as well when he sent off that tweet. And, I mean, you don't send that off if you're considering taking another job. You just don't tweet that. So, and Mike's too smart to, you know, do something like that. So I think it's a very good sign that he is, unless some other major job opens up here in college football that we don't foresee, that he's going to be back here for a fourth season.
I'm not in the business of telling other people what they should do with their careers, because I can't properly project what might be important to somebody else any more than people can properly understand what might be important to me. These things can all be different. But strictly from a coaching perspective, it didn't make a lot of sense to me to leave a Memphis situation that isn't a Power 5 situation, but it is a pretty good Group of 5 situation, to take a bottom-tier, you know, Big 12 job. So I guess I'm not surprised that this didn't go any further than where it apparently went. Did you ever actually think he'd be the coach at Kansas State?
No, I never did. I can see why Kansas State would want him to be the coach at Kansas State, because he's been great here at Memphis. But I just didn't, you know, the only reason to me he would be going to Kansas State is if he thought, one, if there was some friction with the administration here, which I don't see. I have not heard anything along those lines. Or two, if you really didn't think the team was going to be that good next year. And, you know, all indications are, you know, yes, they're going to lose Darrell Henderson, and they're going to lose some offensive linemen, and they've lost these two coordinators over the last day, 24 hours or so. But they're still going to be one of the best teams in their division, the AAC. They're going to have a chance to win a conference title. And, you know, next year Mike's going to look even better than he looks right now to prospective employers at the Power 5 level. So why, you know, you usually only get one shot, you know, when you're a young coach at one of these Power 5 jobs. You want to make sure that shot's the right shot that you're taking. And, you know, if you're not absolutely certain Kansas State is the best fit for you, why just jump at the first one? I think I heard you last week talking about this, you know, from a basketball standpoint, you know, how guys like Archie Miller and Shaka Smart waited. And I think Mike's smart to be waiting for the right job. He's not going to be here at Memphis forever, but he's got a really good situation. He's paid really well. He's paid more than some Power 5 coaches right now, and his staff is the highest paid staff in the Group of 5. Why leave a good situation just for like an average at best Power 5 situation? Mike's a really smart, calculated guy, and I think he's making a smart, calculated decision here.
I agree. I'm talking to Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Appeal on Twitter at @MGiannotto. You mentioned losing coordinators. Chris Ball going to be the head coach at Northern Arizona, and Kenny Dillingham going to be the offensive coordinator at Auburn. Specifically with Dillingham, how big of a loss is that? He is famously only 29 years old. I remember talking about it when Mike promoted him that you don't get that type of job unless somebody recognizes that you are super sharp. And I would say the same thing here. You don't get to be Auburn's offensive coordinator while you're still in your 20s unless your reputation is really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think while Mike calls the plays in this offense, and this is Mike's offense, there's nobody that knows Mike Norvell's offense better than Kenny Dillingham. And I think that's why Gus Malzahn is hiring him. I think he wants a little bit of the magic that Mike has had here at Memphis the last couple of years. Now, you know, at the same time, from Memphis's perspective, like I said, Mike is the one who calls the plays. And I spent a whole 24 hours following around Kenny this past August for a column I did. And being around him, he's a hard worker. He's super sharp. He talks the same way. A lot of people around that building say he's like Mike Norvell's clone. But at the same time, Mike Norvell's in a lot of those meetings, you know, and leading a lot of those meetings. So, like, to me, the constant in all this is Mike, and he's shown, I mean, they've had three different offensive coordinators during his three seasons here, and they've had back-to-back top 10 offenses with two different quarterbacks and with using kind of two different styles. So while I do think Kenny Dillingham is a rising star in the profession and probably, honestly, if things go well at Auburn, I wouldn't be shocked if he's a head coach sooner rather than later. I also think Memphis will be just fine without him.
I'm talking to Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Appeal. I want to switch gears because you were inside FedEx Forum on Saturday night when LeBron James and the Lakers came in to play in front of a packed house. LeBron was terrific. The Grizzlies, not so much. So it was a lopsided game. But there was still this sweet moment in the closing seconds. Forgive me if I've got the name wrong, but Brianne Miller, an equipment manager with the Grizzlies, who LeBron says he remembered and had recognized in recent years that she always wore an exclusive pair of his shoes. And his, as you reported, bodyguard, a security team, called her over while Joakim Noah was shooting free throws, and he gave her the shoes, gave her a hug. She broke down. It was a really sweet moment. You got to talk to her. For people who might not have seen the column yet, retell that story as best you can.
Yeah, no, I believe her name is Brianne Miller is how it's pronounced. But, yeah, she's an assistant equipment manager for the Grizzlies, and her job at home games is to help take care of the visiting team, whoever that is. And she's 23 years old, grew up here in Memphis, and she's been a LeBron fan her entire life. And to the point that she wears a version of his shoes to work every day. It's not just for Saturday night at the Lakers game. Every game when you see her at a Grizzlies game, she's wearing a pair of LeBron shoes, and she's just always been a huge fan of his. And it was towards the end of the game. LeBron had come out because the Lakers were winning big, and she was picking up some of the other players' warm-up gear to take it to the back to get it washed and ready to go for when the Lakers leave. And as she was walking down the sideline, LeBron started talking to her because she was wearing these – on Saturday night, she was wearing a pair of LeBron's – I believe it's the John Elliott edition. So very, you know, I looked it up. It's like a – retails at like $190, but there's a limited amount of pairs. And LeBron was impressed that she got those, you know, she had those shoes and remembered her from previous, you know, the past couple of years when he's come here. And so they started talking, and she told him, you know, I've always been Team LeBron, always. And she kind of told him a little bit right there on the sideline how big a fan she was. And then she started walking away to go about doing her job like she always does. And LeBron's security guard, he has like a personal security guard in addition to whatever the security the Lakers have, said, hey, hold on, come back. And so then she kneeled down on the baseline there in that video that's kind of gone viral. LeBron took off his purple shoes and gave them to her, and then she just went back to work, basically. It was funny, I didn't really see the moment because I'm sitting on press row, and it's, you know, especially at a crowded game like that, you can't see. But then in the locker room, someone asked LeBron about it, and he talked about it. And so then I went, and I was like, oh, this is a really interesting story about this assistant. LeBron thought she was a ball girl, but she's an equipment manager. And I went and found her. She was packing up the Lakers' bags to go home after the game. And I mean, she just said, I mean, it's a moment she'll never forget. She told me, we asked her where the shoes were then, and she goes, I locked them in a vault where the Grizzlies keep their jerseys. Ain't nobody touching those shoes but me. It was just like, you know, one of those moments. She broke down crying. It was really sweet. And it was just, you know, it was a really, genuine moment I felt from LeBron. Like, some of these things can feel planned and choreographed, and this just felt, you know, spur of the moment, and it just shows you, you know, I know there's, you know, you can hate on some of these guys because you don't like them as players, but that was just, it was just a really cool moment to see a superstar like that recognize, you know, just a normal person going about their job and giving them a memory they'll never forget.
Yeah, he seems to be one of these superstars, and I'm not saying it's unique to him, but seems to be one of the superstars who really understands the impact he can make on people and the stories he can create for people. I've seen him at his LeBron James Skills Academy in the past, and, you know, at least one afternoon he would jump on the court and play for about 10 minutes with, like, there'd be these games going, you know, like five on five, up and down, and he'd sub somebody out, and he'd jump on the court and just start being a member of this team. And what this creates is, and then he'd go to another court and do the same thing, go to another court and do the same thing. He'd switch teams in the middle so that at some point everybody was on the court with LeBron James. So now you've got, I don't know, 85 kids who can always say, hey, let me tell you about the time I played basketball with LeBron James. And, you know, he seems to understand that is exactly why he's doing what he's doing. He's creating these moments, and he created one for a young woman from Memphis on Saturday night. Like you said, it was a really sweet deal. Before that game happened, the Tigers beat UAB inside FedEx Forum, and that's two wins in a row. And so they'll take a winning record into Saturday's game with Tennessee. Obviously, the Vols are terrific, but it does look like, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here, Memphis is still, according to all the computers, a very average basketball team at best. But it does look like they're getting better, and that's encouraging, right?
Yeah, I think the key thing here is, I think, Penny is figuring out what he's got with this team, you know, because again, these are all new players for him coaching for the most part, except for, you know, Alex Lomax, who he coached, you know, in high school. And I think they're figuring out what Penny wants from them. And that's why I think you've seen the improvement you've seen over the last two games. Guys are settling into roles, and Penny's figuring, you know, Penny's realizing all the things he wanted to implement for this program, he probably can't do this year. It's probably, you know, it's going to be a more of a gradual process. And so he's pulling back on some things, emphasizing other things. And so that's why I think you've seen them play much better over the last two games. And yeah, I think you're right. I think the Tennessee game is going to be a tall task. Because it's clearly the best team they've played this year, but it is encouraging that they are playing much better. They're sharing the ball better. They're playing better defensively, and it bodes well for, you know, just beyond the Tennessee game. Once you go into AAC play, where, you know, yeah, there's some teams that look pretty good, but I don't see how Memphis is going to look. If they play the way they did the last two games, they're going to be right in the thick of things in conference play.
I agree. I'm wrapping up here with Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Pill. Last thing before I let you go, and I know you're not the beat writer anymore, so you're not around the program every day like you used to be, but Penny Hardaway has said on multiple occasions that he's still optimistic, at the very least, that they're going to add two more five-star prospects in the class of 2019. How likely do you think that is?
I don't know if likely is the right word. I would say I would be really impressed if he did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they have a good shot at Trendon Wofford. He announces his, I think he said he's going to announce his top four on Friday. I would be surprised if Memphis is not in his top four, given all the time and effort they've put into him. You know, to me, it seems, you know, I don't know, but, you know, maybe someone will reclass. That's the wild card in all this, because they are in good with Jalen Green and RJ Hampton, guys who are right now 2020 recruits, but could reclass to 2019. And he has that Wiseman carrot now in his, you know, officially in his back pocket. And, you know, you'd think that would be attractive to some kids to be able to go play with James Wiseman. But I think he ends up getting one more and then probably adding someone else late. Not necessarily a top 20 recruit, but maybe another top 100 recruit, just like he kind of did his first year, where he, in about 3 weeks in the late signing period, was able to cobble together a pretty good class. That suggests to me this late period, he'll be able to find someone else, even if some of the targets we're focusing on now fall through. But it seems like two will be hard, but you never know. I don't want to put anything past Penny, given what he's done here the first, you know, 6-7 months on the job.
That's what I've said. I'd be surprised, but he's already surprised me multiple times. So, I'm not going to say never on any of this stuff. That's Mark Giannotto, lead sports columnist, Commercial Pill, on Twitter at @MGiannotto. Thanks for being here, buddy. I'll see you later on this week.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Gary.
You got it. Thanks for being here. That's Mark Giannotto from the Commercial Pill. I think what he said about the possibility of adding two more five stars in class of 2019 is what I said last week. And what I still believe to be true, which is that I'll be surprised if it happens, but I'd be happy to be surprised because it would be awesome. But if it happens, I would assume it'll be Trendon Wofford and then a class of 2020 kid who reclassifies. I don't think they'll get two more five stars who are currently listed as class of 2019 prospects. Maybe. Again, I'm not ruling anything out, but I'd be surprised. But if they do end up with two more five stars in the class of 2019, I would assume it's Trendon Watford and then somebody who reclassifies from 2020.